Dimey got his first hat trick, and it couldn't have come at a better time. Kane's three goals lifted the Chicago Blackhawks into the Western Conference Final last night with a 7-5 win over Vancouver in Game 6 of their series. The 20-year-old Kane says he's been waiting 2 years. The Cleveland Cavaliers have finished off another team in four games in the first round of the LeBron James-led team. They swept Detroit in four straight last night. They finished off Atlanta in four with a win, 84-74. The St. Louis Cardinals are in Pittsburgh tonight to open up a three-game series against the Pirates. The Chicago Cubs host the San Diego Padres tonight, and the White Sox continue their three-game series in Cleveland tonight. That's sports.
WILL programs are made possible by Community Concierge Magazine. Every issue includes an event calendar, attractions, and maps, as well as a business and shopping guide. Community Concierge Magazine is distributed throughout East Central Illinois and always presents Champaign-Urbana at its best.
It's 2:41. The collapse of a Bloomington, Illinois manufacturer has led to a legal tangle involving dozens of corporations and hundreds of people, and now it seems lots of missing money. Charlie Schlenker, a public radio station WGLT in Normal, has more.
Wildwood, it's lucha! It's almost in the lucha!
Chanting, "Wildwood, listen, we're in the fight." About 150 former workers at the company that made vacuum cleaner bags and other cleaning products protested the company stiffing them on their final paychecks and on other payments. Speaking through a translator, Graciela Rosales talked about all the ways she's still on the hook for the company's dereliction, including income tax withholding.
I was paying child support, and for my last three checks, they were taking the money from me. And this has not gone for my child support payments, has not gone to my children. And my health insurance hasn't been going for my health insurance since February.
Wildwood Industries had been a three-decade-old company with 700 employees set for expansion to a new factory, or so everyone thought. Signs of trouble began appearing last year when the firm stopped work on the new facility in North Normal. There were rumblings of credit problems, then layoffs. A couple months later, the shutdown.
Unfortunately, management allowed employees to continue working here without any financial ability of the company to pay for those workers' wages.
Alex Molia is a Schaumburg-based attorney appointed as the bankruptcy trustee for the remnants of Wildwood. A fair number of companies have gone under in the economic and credit crisis the world has faced since last summer, particularly those that guessed wrong and were in the middle of expanding when the economy went south. But Molia says this is more than a company that ran out of cash.
There is about $150 million unaccounted for that may have been used for all kinds of purposes, not necessarily related to the operations of the business, and we believe used to engage in other transactions outside of the operations of Wildwood.
That includes purchases of real estate, overbilling, and possible kickbacks from vendors or phantom vendors. Wildwood has dozens of creditors, and some of the loans taken out appear to have the same collateral pledged. Some equipment used to secure loans may not exist. Molia says it's very complicated.
We are cooperating and sharing our findings so far with the various government agencies that are conducting their own criminal investigations as to the actions of the owners of the company.
Company owner Gary Wilder has had a few complaints over the decades involving employee discrimination and sexual harassment. Cases before the Human Rights Commission and Court of Claims dragged on for years, but didn't attract a lot of attention. Wilder was also a sports fan and generous to Illinois State University athletic programs. Sometimes he offered teams use of a private aircraft, though ISU says not in recent years. He's also done quiet philanthropy for not-for-profit groups without his or his company's name publicly attached. WGLT failed in its attempts to contact Wilder for this story. Court-appointed receivers are still trying to quantify how much the company owes workers. It's unknown whether they'll see the money because the cash generated from liquidation will first go to lien holders and then any unsecured creditors like former employees. This word from trustee Alex Molia to the workers does not endear him to the crowd, including Gabriel Gonzalez, who doesn't like being last in line.
Pero él sigue ganando dinero, y a nosotros...
But he's going to get money, but he told us to just forget about the money we're owed.
No es justo. También queremos nuestro dinero. No
puede ser. And it's not fair. We deserve our money, too, and just for being an immigrant doesn't mean people can step on us.
The workers are getting support from the Central Illinois Organizing Project, a social justice group, and ex-Wildwood employee Joy Castillo hopes others can help, too.
We're looking for the support of the community, from the companies and from the churches, from anyone who will back us up and help us push to get monies that are owed to all the employees that you see standing here. From Wildwood.
Bankruptcy trustee Alex Molia handles such cases for a living, some bigger than what's happened here. But Molia says this one is different.
In terms of the size of the business versus the amount of dollars that are missing, this is a massive, massive problem. Huge, huge, huge troubled situation.
Molia says an effort to secure financing to restart the company and save the jobs failed, and an offer before the court for the remaining assets of Wildwood is $3 million, while debtors that have legal paper to back up their claims have submitted a tab for more than $13 million. So it's entirely possible in this case, even the bankers won't get much back. I'm Charlie Schlenker, WGLT News.
It's 2:46. Thanks for listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL. WILL, thanks to Jack and Marjorie Richmond for their gift of the Richmond Journalism Studio adjacent to Campbell Hall for public telecommunication. I'm Celeste Quinn, and it is 2:47 Central Time. Their songs are among the first frog songs of spring. Perhaps you've heard them peeping and singing in choruses. They're called spring peepers, and they're one of the frogs of eastern North America. Let's listen to a recording of some spring peepers. The peepers' songs and the songs of other frogs and toads of North America are on a CD that comes with a guide called The Frogs and Toads of North America. Each recording begins with a brief introduction.
Spring peeper, Pseudacris crucifer.
The Frogs and Toads of North America is a comprehensive guide with beautiful, sometimes dramatic photos of frogs and toads. For example, there's a photo of a barking tree frog about to be attacked by a pig frog. One of the authors of the guide is my guest in this portion of the program. Carl Gerhardt is a professor of biological sciences at the University of Missouri. He, together with Lang Elliott and Carlos Davidson, are the authors of The Frogs and Toads of North America. Professor Gerhardt, good to talk with you.
Thanks. Me too.
The barking tree frog escaped that pig frog. If it hadn't, what would have happened?
Well, that pig frog would have eaten it.
Ooh. They are two handsome frogs. You want to describe them for us?
Well, the barking tree frog is the largest native, mainline U.S. species. There's a Mexican tree frog that barely gets into southern Texas that may be a little bit bigger, but it's the jumbo of the tree frogs. It has kind of a rough skin. It lives in very dry areas, except for when it comes to breed. And its call, it sounds like a barking dog. And they're extremely variable. They can be solid green, or they usually have spots. And I think the book has plenty of examples with the different color variations. And pig frogs sound just like pigs. They're kind of a funny call, and they live in deep water. What's interesting in the southeastern United States, where they occur with a bullfrog, those two frogs, which are about the same size, tend to live in different kinds of ponds. And not really sure what the diagnostic features of those habitats are, but they tend to avoid one another.
Mm. What kinds of defenses do frogs and toads have against predators, including one another?
Well, probably the biggest one is camouflage and staying still and not moving. Most predators are oriented toward moving prey, and so frogs do that very well. Frogs such as some tree frogs, and certainly the toads and the spadefoots, have toxins in their skin. And so if they're grabbed by a predator, and unfortunately this can often be your pet dog, they can get quite a nasty shot of venom from those animals.
Yeah. What's the difference between a frog and a toad?
Well, toads usually have dry, warty skin, and frogs in general have moist, smooth skin. Although if you look at the book, you'll see things like spadefoot toads and narrowmouth toads and things like that, which may have the word toad, but they're not the true toads in the same sense. They're more toads in the sense that they are living most of their lives on land and just coming to water to breed.
Mm. We've been hearing the spring peepers now in Illinois for some time this spring. You want to tell us about their vocalizations? It seems like they're calling one another in communal choruses almost.
Well, if it depends on so your point of view in the chorus, from a distance, it's just a cacophony. If you get close to a pair of males, that are, especially if they're a little bit isolated from the rest of the chorus, you'll hear they often alternate their calls, so avoiding overlap. And the calls that you played are called the advertisement calls. They're given only by the male, and they have a dual function. First, they're telling the females, come hither. In frogs and toads, it's the female who makes the mating decision. The male is calling. The female identifies that her species and perhaps the quality of the male solely by the sound.
Hmm.
You can do playback experiments, and, of course, the speaker doesn't look or smell anything like a frog, and female frogs that are ready to mate will hop right over and jump on the speaker and try to find the male that they think is inside.
Now, the peeper has a large range. Do their songs, their vocalizations differ area to area?
Not a whole lot. The ones in the southern United States tend to be a little bit lower pitched, and that's simply a consequence of the fact that those are somewhat larger frogs. So, in general, the pitch of the frog's call is inversely related to its body size. So bigger frogs, bigger males have lower frequency pitches, lower pitched calls than small males.
Hmm. What's the preferred habitat of the spring peeper?
Just moist woodland. And that's where they are most of the year, and you hardly ever see them. In the fall, you see them hopping around a little bit, and maybe after the spring when the breeding's over, you might find one. But mostly you only find the peepers during that when they're making a lot of racket in early spring.
Yeah. They're really shy.
They are.
And they're very tiny.
Yeah,
but their songs are really lovely. That's my favorite. One of my favorite things about spring.
They have a second call, too. It's a kind of a trilled call. And so the second part of that advertisement, the first, when you say it's an advertisement call, it just mm-hmm. says, here I am, I'm a male spring peeper, okay? And so females, if you're around, you should come and mate with me. If you're another male spring peeper, then you should keep your distance. And if the another male doesn't keep his distance, then they switch to this trill call, which is sometimes called an aggressive call. And if the rival doesn't pay attention to that, there may be a little scuffle, you know, a little wrestling match or anything. But most frogs don't hurt each other.
Well, that's nice to hear. And the female peeper, what has she got to say for herself?
Well, she doesn't say anything at all unless she's already laid her eggs or she's not ready to lay her eggs, and she blunders into a male, and he's amorous and tries to mate with her, and so she has a call that's somewhat like the male's aggressive call, and essentially it says wrong or not now or I've got a headache or whatever, buzz off.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That's the only time you would hear a female making a sound.
Yeah. When we hear about birds and insects and other animals, we often hear about the challenges they face as a result of habitat destruction. How are the frogs and toads of North America faring in that regard?
Well, they're not doing very well. I mean, certainly the habitat destruction is ongoing, and that's a concern. The biggest concern with the survival of frogs and toads, however, is a chytrid fungus. This is described in the book in the conservation section, and this fungus is wiping out frogs around the world, and it's wiping out species whole species in pristine areas where man hasn't had much effect at all.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's a lot of speculation about what has caused this. there's some indication this fungus has been around for some time. It only seems to attack frogs in certain elevations and certain kind of weather patterns. But the one speculation is that global warming has either made the fungus stronger and more deadly, or it's weakened the defenses of frogs in certain areas. But I'm an evolutionary biologist, and so, you know, extinction is part of life. I mean, most species that have been on Earth are extinct, but it's very frightening that in my own lifetime, or in the last 10 years or so, four or five species that I've seen in the wild are now extinct. They're gone. Mm. And this is an unprecedented rate of extinction, and it's worrying.
So are there things we can do to lend these animals a hand?
Well, I think there's a huge effort by many zoos and other organizations to, in some cases, actually go to places and collect a lot of the frogs and keep them away from this fungus and try to find some cure. There's even a news story today about a bacterial cure that may be promising. And so it's a very suspenseful period to see if we can figure out some way to save the frogs from this chytrid. And we have, admittedly, all this other stuff that we're doing, and including perhaps even global warming, those are man problems. But, the immediate battle in the trenches has to do with this trying to fight this fungus and save the frogs that we can from that.
Mm-hmm. Carl Gerhart, thank you so much for talking with me this afternoon. I've really enjoyed it.
You're welcome.
Carl Gerhart is a professor of biological sciences at the University of Missouri. He, together with Lang Elliott and Carlos Davidson, are the authors of The Frogs and Toads of North America. And to wrap up this afternoon, let's listen to one more frog. This is the barking tree frog, and this comes from the CD that is a companion to this guide, The Frogs and Toads of North America.
Barking tree frog, Hyla gratiosa.
And sky.
We have a problem today that we think that architecture is independent of climate. You build a sleek glass box, whether you're in Dallas, Texas, or London, England, and you don't pay attention to where you are.
That's John Oxendorf, a structural engineer at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. He studies buildings that are hundreds or thousands of years old. He said they're often more environmentally friendly than new buildings.
Traditional construction.